We'll call the case of Luis Blanyer et al. V. Geneva Products, Inc. Mr. Weiss.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Saul Weiss, and I'm here to argue this morning the reversal of the District Court's granting of the 12B6 motion. Let me start by saying the court below...
Mr. Weiss, do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I do, 3 minutes.
Thank you. That request will be granted.
The court below committed error with respect to the substance involved in Pennsylvania on medical monitoring, and also with respect to statute of limitations if the discovery rule applies, and below also committed a procedural error because the complaint clearly set forth a plausible theory with facts to support medical monitoring, and under that standard, it met Iqbal Twombly and also Phillips, which is a Third Circuit decision on what the standard is.
Don't we have a threshold issue here to deal with of workers' comp exclusivity?
Well, I'm going to get to it. We do, and that was decided on November 22, 2013 by the Supreme Court. A Pennsylvania TUI decision.
But TUI dealt with the manifestation of claims more than 300 weeks after termination of employment and said that those were excluded from the definition of injury. We have Brandley saying that medical monitoring claims are included in the definition of injury for workers' comp purposes.
Brandley also says you can't bring a class action for medical monitoring under the compact.
A class action is just a procedural device. It's not a substantive claim. It's not a cause of action.
And Brantley says how to address that. That is, they need to be brought individually in the agency forum, but they can be treated on a consolidated basis.
It does say that, but that would defeat the public policy of Redland Soccer. And Redland Soccer was Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision in 1997, which followed the reasoning of the late Chief Judge of this circuit, Judge Becker, in Paley 1 and Paley 2, which are two medical monitoring claims involving a toxic site. The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania said the common law of Pennsylvania recognizes medical monitoring for any toxic exposure, assuming you meet the seven factors.
But the Commonwealth Court, which we will follow as an appellate state court, unless there is clear indication that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court would decide otherwise, has said that the procedural device of a class action is not a basis to get around its holding that medical monitoring is a covered injury under workers' comp.
So I ask this question, Judge Ross. I understand your question. If you ask for medical monitoring more than 300 weeks after you last worked at the plant, you can't bring a claim under the compact. Your only remedy is to bring a claim in common pleas, Court of Pennsylvania. That's the holding of TUI.
Well, it's true that if the discovery rule is in play, you have a situation that has a good analog to TUI, but that turns on whether there is implicated here the discovery rule. That is, there's a threshold determination perhaps we need to make about the statute of limitations question. But if we conclude that it was something that was known or reasonably known within those first 300 weeks, at that point, wouldn't this be properly considered as a workers' comp exclusivity issue?
But under Gleason, which is a 2011 Supreme Court of Pennsylvania case, that's a question of fact for the fact finder. It's not a gatekeeping function by a court under 12b6. Standards. That's the difference.
Mr. Weiss, you agree, both sides of you agree, that the statute of limitations here has run, that you've got to make you've got to find an exception to keep this case alive. You either have to find a TUI exception, let's call it the TUI exception, or you have to find a discovery rule exception. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay. If we don't agree with you that the TUI rule reestablished your claim, let me use that word, how do you show that that the statute of limitation was told under the discovery rule?
Because in order to bring a claim for medical monitoring, you need to know a lot of facts. Some of the facts the plaintiffs today don't know. They didn't know them before TUI. They didn't know them.
They didn't know TUI. I'll grant you they didn't know the outcome of the TUI decision. No,
correct.
No one did. But they knew certain facts. On one hand, I find it difficult to say that an employee has to assume that their employer is using a chemical, which is a toxic chemical, at a level beyond which it's safe. I have trouble with that concept to say that the employee should know that. But in this case, there were certain facts that they were made aware of during the time of their employment. And at least as to these named plaintiffs, the last date of employment for one of them was 2006.
Which was still 300 weeks.
Yeah, but that's TUI.
Yeah.
That's
correct.
TUI. I'm saying TUI. If TUI doesn't make your exception, tell me how the discovery rule does.
Certainly. So why don't we look at the Gleason case?
Yeah.
In 2011. In 1993, the Gleason family home in Moosic, which is halfway between Wilkes-Barre and Scranton in northeast Pennsylvania, began to have a number of floods. And the floods were caused because in 1993 they were changing the sewer system.
We're familiar with the case, but the holding there, part of the reasoning was that the dangers associated with toxic mold were not widely known. In contrast, on the face of the complaint here, you've laid out how going back to the 1980s, the risks of exposure to PVC and the other chemicals you identify was widely known, not only in medical journals, but in footnotes 11 and 12 of the complaint, you're referencing trade journals and environmental journals.
And it's an issue of fact as to whether these plaintiffs knew of those trade journals. They didn't.
It's not a subjective question. It's whether the representatives or the class members could reasonably know.
I think that's a question of fact, though, Judge Krause. It's not a matter of law. And there can be reasonable differences that a jury has to determine who knew what and when and where.
What do we do with the fact that the replete in the complaint are references to these dangers being widely known back into the 1980s?
If we didn't plead that in the complaint, we would not meet a threshold burden of setting out a medical monitoring claim on Redland Soccer.
How is it, I mean, there's also no specificity in terms of how you were awakened in the interim to the injuries here. You allege you recently obtained the material safety and data sheets, but there's no indication of how or why, whether it was even within the last 2 years and the circumstances, why it wasn't possible before. And you declined the opportunity to amend, to add additional facts before the district court.
Well, and the reason, all the facts that we knew, we pled. We have no other facts to offer on those issues. And once again, that raises factual issues.
You don't know how the data sheets came into your possession?
That's not what I understand the court asked to amend the complaint for. My understanding is the court asked us, did we have any medical information? All we had is what we gave the court. So amending the complaint would have been futile. We believe we set out in comprehensive fashion all the facts necessary to fit the seven factors of Redland Soccer to why monitoring is appropriate. And these are not injuries. These are people who are not injured.
What are the facts that establish that this was not reasonably known on, with reasonable investigation until some point within 2 years before your filing of the complaint?
None of the plaintiffs knew what the exposure levels were of vinyl chloride or PVC or styrene or any other of the toxicants at the plant.
What additional information did they obtain within 2 years of filing of the complaint that was not available earlier?
They still don't know, and we need discovery to find out whether the plant did air samplings or other testing to determine whether the levels of exposure exceeded that set out by the government. We don't know that information. We don't have it. So there's no way they would be informed.
Are you saying you don't know and don't have the information as to whether they were even exposed at greater than normal background levels?
Correct. We need that from the plant. We don't have that information. It wasn't posted at the plant. We don't have it.
Let's take a step back again. Will you agree that the statute of limitations for medical monitoring is 2 years?
Yes, under Barnes.
Under Barnes.
Which was decided at summary judgment after discovery, expert reports, and a lot of depositions were taken.
Okay. 2 years from when?
2 years when you acquire enough information to be informed that you should ask for.
Not 2 years from your first exposure.
Correct.
Okay. So, in essence, you're saying here, in order to make these complaints, once again saying to you, if your 2E argument doesn't fly, in order to make these complaints within the statute, you essentially are saying that you didn't find out until 2013.
2013 is when these plaintiffs had the opportunity to file a class action for medical monitoring because it didn't exist before the 2E decision.
Okay, so it was the fact that it didn't exist and they filed it at that point.
They filed it within 2 years of November 22nd, 2013.
Your red light's on, but one other question.
Sure.
It goes to what Judge Cross deemed as perhaps the threshold to the exclusivity of workers' comp. Do your clients still have a medical monitoring claim that they could make in workers' comp if in fact?
No.
Why not?
Because under 301C you can't bring any claim if you've been out of work more than 300 weeks from the time you were employed.
That's if the injury occurred and you knew of the injury or had reason to know it within that time frame. That's to say that the statute of limitations has run for workers' comp.
I'm sorry, we'll say it again, Ted Kress. I didn't understand your question.
Is that to say that the injury, that is the injury of exposure and creation of the risk, that occurred, if that, as you've postulated, it occurred within 300 weeks of...
Yes, to answer your question.
And if you had reason to know of the claim and could have brought it within that time frame, then it would be time barred as a matter of workers' comp law.
No, right? if you had reason to know that your exposure was at a certain level within 300 weeks of your working at the plant, you could bring a claim for medical monitoring as an individual under the compact.
And if you didn't, if you waited until after those 300 weeks, then it's barred under workers.
Correct. So if you didn't get the knowledge within 300 weeks, you're time barred. And that's where TUI comes in. And TUI says that's not the public policy of Pennsylvania. The public policy of Pennsylvania is give the worker an opportunity to bring a claim. If you can't bring it under the compact, you bring it under common pleas, under common law, and the defendant, the employer, has every defense he would normally have.
Can we step back for a second to your earlier answer? If you're saying that you still don't have a basis for the allegation as a necessary element for a medical monitoring claim, that there was exposure to greater than normal background levels.
We don't have that information. We only know that they were exposed to vinyl chloride and other chemicals. We don't know at what levels and to what duration and where in the plant.
Why doesn't that go to the alternative ground in the district court of failure to adequately plead a claim? That is, don't you need the specificity under Iqbal and Twombly of some factual allegations supporting that you can satisfy the elements of the claim?
No, I think under Iqbal and Twombly, and as articulated in the Phillips case in the Third Circuit, once you say you've been exposed and you know what the limits are, it's plausible that you can make a claim out. And that's all that the pleadings require, plausibility, not a certainty. This is not a trial on the merits.
But it requires more than speculation as well. What beyond speculation do you base the complaint on?
Well, you're exposed to vinyl chloride, and vinyl chloride is known to be a carcinogenic agent. And we've listed in paragraphs 61 through 67 all the types of cancers that are associated in the literature with vinyl chloride exposure.
Okay. All right. Mr. Thank you. Weiss, we'll have you back on rebuttal. Mr. Baghdadi.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Justin Baghdadi on behalf of Genova Products. Your Honors, this is not a TUI case. TUI applies to individuals who have manifested an occupational disease. They actually are sick. And that disease did not manifest until more than 300 weeks after their last date of employment.
But isn't this close parallel to TUI if what we have, if we conclude that the discovery rule does apply here, and we were presented with a basis to conclude that they, or the district court was, that these plaintiffs couldn't reasonably have learned about their claim until some point within 2 years of their filing, wouldn't this then be outside of the scope of the injury, given the time bar of workers' comp? Workers' comp is just a straight-up occurrence rule, right? So if the discovery rule applies, it would seem by its terms outside of the scope of injury in the very same way that TUI was.
Well, in New York, so it's a wholly different injury that these plaintiffs and proposed class members have brought a claim for. So medical monitoring, your injury is the exposure itself, which has placed you at a significantly increased risk of contracting a serious latent disease. That's your injury. And you haven't gotten sick, and in fact, if you have gotten sick, you can't bring a medical monitoring claim. You're precluded from doing that. Your injury in those circumstances, if you do get sick, is the disease itself that you got. And the problem TUI was addressing was instances where in asbestos is the sort of most common one, and that is what was at issue in TUI and other cases. But the injury is latent. It doesn't actually manifest until much later. And that's where the 300-week provision in the definition of injury comes in the workers' compensation statute. There are, in 301C, there are two different definitions of injury. And Brennelly focuses on 301C1 and all the cases interpreting that definition of injury, which is the much broader, more general definition of injury. It encompasses all work-related.
So are you saying that if they can't bring this medical monitoring case under TUI, but if all of a sudden 2 years from now these named plaintiffs and 10 others all came down with cancer, they could bring a TUI claim at that time?
Yes, and it would be for a different injury. That's a whole different injury than what they've
sued for. So they're not allowed to monitor, not allowed to seek medical monitoring, even though medical monitoring has been recognized by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and acknowledged by our court in Barnes. But you have to wait until you can, the cancer exhibits itself.
No, Your Honor. So they can bring the medical monitoring in the workers' compensation system, and they always could have.
Can they still bring it?
Well, there'd be a statute of limitations question, and there'd be a discovery rule issue there.
So but they can't,
but they could, Your Honor, is the point. You know,
they could have up to 3 years because it's an occurrence rule, but if the discovery rule would put them beyond those 3 years, then why aren't we right back in the land of TUI? That is the reasoning of the court, that one place or the other, there needs to be availability of relief.
Well, so that is the problem TUI was addressing, although it wasn't in the medical monitoring context at all. It was, again, for...
Different section, different injury, but we have the same concept of what is effectively a statute of limitations, a time bar, that can be viewed as circumscribing what the injury is.
Sure, and so I think your answer is that it's part of the trade-off with the Workers' Compensation Act. I mean, this fact pattern could apply not just to medical monitoring, but to any claim that you may have that's a workers' comp claim, but there's some sort of discovery rule issue. And I don't think there's a reason to apply the discovery rule here in the first place, but we'll put that aside for a second. I think what you're suggesting is if there's a workers' comp injury, when you have a discovery rule issue in that particular case, and now all of a sudden you haven't discovered it and couldn't have discovered it with diligence until several years later, that's not specific to a medical monitoring question. That's any workers' compensation injury, I think, right, where you have a discovery rule issue. The fact that workers' comp is a occurrence-based regime, I think, it's part of the balance that was part of the trade-off that's behind workers' compensation in the first place. There's supposed to be limitations to the claims that are compensable under the Workers' Compensation Act. And certain claims are given up that could otherwise have been brought in state court in exchange for the workers' compensation system in the first place. I'd also like to talk about this concept that TUI started the clock, that when TUI was decided in November of 2013, that's when the statute of limitations began, which doesn't apply here in the first place because this isn't a TUI claim. But if that were true, if TUI somehow starts the clock ticking for a claim, that would in effect reach back into time and say, regardless of when the conduct occurred, regardless of whether you preserved your claims or investigated them or did anything, you can now within 2 years or two bring this cause of action. It doesn't apply in a sweeping retroactive manner like that under Pennsylvania law. And that's in effect what the argument proposed by Mr. Weiss would do.
I'd like to get back to questions that were asked by Judge Krause and Judge Fisher, and that is the medical monitoring claims being advanced here, are they now foreclosed in the workers' compensation setting because of the passage of 300 weeks?
So the 300-week issue is unrelated to the
question. Right. That's what I want to try to find out.
Okay. Right. So they're wholly distinct. So the 300-week provision that's a subject of TUI, that's all about 301C2, which is the other definition of injury in the workers' compensation statute that applies to occupational diseases. Medical monitoring claim isn't a claim for an occupational disease. It's, if you look at Brenly, again, they're looking at 301C1, which is the more general definition of injury.
But Section 602 provides for a 3-year statute of limitations for those kinds of injuries that would include medical monitoring, correct?
That's right. That's the statute of limitations. I'm trying to decouple it from the 300-week issue, though, which is
right. Okay.
Only applicable.
Right. Now, let's follow up on Judge Krause's question on the 3-year statute of limitations. Is that subject to a discovery rule?
My understanding is that there is a discovery rule provision in the workers' compensation system. But the key point here, Your Honors, is that whatever the right analysis is, it belongs in the workers' compensation regime. It's not, this is a workers' compensation claim, and there's no basis.
Like any other thing would be subject to a 3-year statute of limitations, and you don't get a common law cause of action because it's barred by the statute of limitations.
That's right. The key point here is that whatever the statute of limitations analysis is, it's a workers' compensation statute of limitations analysis that this isn't the right place to have that.
But Section 602 is, by its terms, it's simply an occurrence rule. It doesn't provide, at least by its terms, except for injury from ionizing radiation, which the nature of the injury, its relationship to employment is not known to the employee. Aside from that very narrow exception, it doesn't provide a discovery rule. Is there some other discovery rule in workers' comp or in the case law that you're referring to?
Unfortunately, I don't have a case I can cite to you as I stand here right now, but it is my understanding that there are cases where the discovery rule can apply in the workers' compensation context. But again, I do think the key point is that that's where this case belongs, and whether it's timely in that form or not, that's the form for it. There's nothing that gives a right to bring this claim outside of the workers' compensation.
But if it isn't timely and if there isn't a claim, doesn't that re-trigger the TUI claim?
I'm not quite sure. You
essentially started out, this is not a TUI case.
Correct.
You said it's a workers' compensation case.
Yes.
Okay, if because of the passage of time, it's no longer a workers' compensation case, does that now make it a TUI case again?
No, Your Honor, because the reason it's not a TUI case is because it's about a completely different injury. TUI is only about an occupational disease that manifests.
Right.
These individuals have not manifested anything, and they may never, and we have no reason to think they will. It's a wholly different injury that they're... So the injury for these individuals occurred at the moment of exposure, whatever the moment of exposure was that put them at this significantly increased risk.
All right, let's go down another line.
Sure.
Under Barnes, when should these employees have asked for medical monitoring?
At the moment, within 2 years.
Of what?
Of the moment that each individual was placed at a significantly increased risk of contracting this.
And when was that?
It will be a different answer for every single one of these people.
Okay.
And again, we don't think any of them were exposed at a dangerous level, but they would require an expert to come in and say, this person worked in this particular job for 8 hours a day.
Isn't one of these nameplates plaintiffs a bookkeeper?
I don't believe one was a bookkeeper, but there certainly were back office employees.
Yeah, some of these were back office employees.
One of them was a packer who took the finished product, which is PVC pipe that's in my house. It's probably in this building. It's at the store. It's not dangerous. And took the finished product and put it into boxes and sent it out the door. Not involved in the actual manufacturing of the pipe itself, but just taking the finished product.
That's a good question. When did they know? I mean, that's... When did they know? When did this two-year clock start running? When should they have known?
Well, right, so could have known, I think, is the right question. And
could have known, you're right.
Right. Again, it'll probably be different for each of these people. The key thing that Judge Mann focused on, which I think is the right question, which is they know now because they bought their claim in 2015. What is it that happened during the two-year period prior to when they filed? That is new information that came to light that they could not have known before. What happened between May 2013 and May 2015? What's new? What was suddenly revealed to them? And there isn't anything, Your Honor.
Well, there is TUI.
Well, sure. And I think that's what happened here. TUI was decided, and there was a thought that maybe we can come up with a new breed of class action after TUI was filed.
Should we certify to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court the exclusivity issue?
I think TUI is clear on its face that it's about a wholly different question than the issue that's in front of it. And I think the court can decide it right now without going through that process.
Why haven't you waived the question whether workers' comp exclusivity applies here? Where was that argued in the district court?
So it's true that there wasn't a section in our brief below that laid out that argument as it's laid out in our briefs here. We did cite Bernie in a reply brief below for the point that medical monitoring is compensable. It did raise it in our argument below, but it is true that we didn't make the argument explicitly.
So why isn't it waived?
It's not waived because, first of all, the court can affirm the district court for any reason supported by the record, and this is a pure legal argument. It depends on nothing except the complaint itself. There was no factual development of the record required at all. It's also a jurisdiction question that can be raised at any point.
You're not suggesting it's a jurisdictional question for us, are you?
Not appellate jurisdiction, Your Honor, no.
Even for federal jurisdiction, I mean, it may be a jurisdictional matter in the state court, but are you suggesting that federal diversity jurisdiction is circumscribed by exclusive agency provisions?
So there is a Third Circuit case. Let me pull this. It's Wallace versus UPS. Let me pull the site for that for you. Let's see. 387 Federal Appendix 127 from this court in 2010.
Say that site again.
I'm sorry. It's Wallace versus UPS, 387 Federal Appendix 127 from this court in 2010, and it's in footnote 2 of that opinion, and it was dealing with the New Jersey workers' compensation statute, but it, in that footnote, says that the question of whether a claim is exclusively within the province of the New Jersey workers' compensation system is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction.
That's a non-presidential opinion.
That's true.
We've never said that precedentially.
Not that I've seen.
A number of other courts that have addressed this question have concluded that it is not a matter of federal jurisdiction. It would be treated as a matter of failure to state a claim, but not something that can curtail diversity jurisdiction as prescribed by Congress. Do you agree with that, or are you arguing that it affects our subject matter jurisdiction?
I haven't read those cases, Your Honor. I'm not familiar with the cases you're referring to. I do think the court has subject matter jurisdiction. And that this issue can be addressed on a 12b6 without even getting into subject matter jurisdiction. The American Airlines case that Judge Keenan has decided very recently dealt with this exact issue and came up with the exact right answer and dismissed on a 12b6 without ever getting into jurisdiction. So I certainly think it can and should just be dismissed on the failure to state a claims grounds. That's, I think, appropriate here and certainly much clearer in getting into the jurisdiction question.
Well, one other question on the discovery rule. Why shouldn't the question of the applicability of the discovery rule under these facts here be submitted to a jury?
Well, Your Honor, we have a complaint that's time barred on its face, and we have no reason to believe it. And
you can make that statement. It's easy to make that statement that it's a complaint that's time barred on its face, but it isn't the underpinnings of why you can even make that statement. A whole host of factual questions as to what information was provided to these employees, when that information was provided to these employees, and whether that information was provided to these employees at all. I mean, now, aren't those factual questions that are best left up to the jury, and rather than having the district court determine and us affirm this question as a matter of law?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And one of the things we have here is there's all of this publicly available information. These studies going back to the 70s, some of them earlier than that. We have the OSHA regulations that came out in 1974. There's a wealth of information out there about the risks of working with this material. And, you know, even so, all of that was knowable by these individuals. There's no reason it wasn't knowable by any of these people upon the exercise of diligence. And that is plain from the face of the complaint itself that cites all these materials. And as Judge Mann correctly, I think, held, they looked at a PVC plant. These studies are all about the risks of PVC and VC. They were all out there available to them at any time. And again, it is time barred on its face, and I say that because the plant closed in 2012, so whatever happened, you know, it stopped in 2012. And here's the last named plaintiff for which at the plant again was in 2006. But nothing occurred after the plant closed, and they didn't file until 3 years after that date.
Well, they do make the allegation that these data sheets were required to be disclosed to employees, that they were not, and that they only, quote, recently came into possession of them. Now, we don't know what time frame that is from the face of the complaint, but why isn't it a fair inference that that was within the last 2 years? Is the data on those sheets sufficient to awaken the claim under state law?
Well, so I haven't seen the sheets. The only one in the room who's seen the sheets is probably Mr. Weiss.
The one's attached as an exhibit to the complaint, isn't it?
There were some. I don't know if they're the same ones they have or not. So we Oh, no, I'm sorry, let me back up. Not attached to the complaint. No, there was nothing attached to the complaint. The one that are covered in the record before this court, we submitted those. Some, most of them are publicly available. You can go online and find them as CS sheets. And there are a couple that we attached to a brief below, and we submitted in the appendix here and in the supplemental appendix. Those are examples of MSDS sheets that actually were available to the employees in Hazleton. We have the actual books, and that's a small excerpt. If I had attached the whole thing, it would have been high, but that's a small excerpt of the actual sheets. But those came from us. They haven't attached whatever sheets they have. They haven't told us when they got them, which I think is key. If that's going to be their whole basis for asserting a timely claim, and I don't see how it could be, but if it is, they have to at least plead when they got them. And what they say, what chemicals they relate to, what products they relate to, when they were made, any of this information, we have none of it. And what MSDS sheets say generally is they convey what's already publicly available information. Here's what to do if it gets in your eyes. Here's the right temperature to maintain that. Here's how to properly handle it. And again, I don't know what these ones say because they haven't shown them to us and won't tell us what they say, but they wouldn't say something like, you are being exposed at this particular level. And you know, our process means that you are, you know, at risk of this. It's general safety information about how to handle materials. But most importantly, Your Honor, you know, we haven't seen them. We don't know what they say.
Okay, Mr. Baghdadi. We thank you.
Thank you very much
for your presentation, and we'll have Mr. Weiss back for short rebuttal.
Could I briefly discuss the Smith case that was just decided by Judge Cajones, Alejandro? Smith versus American Airlines said TUI didn't apply because the plaintiffs were still employed by American Airlines. And TUI says you have to be out of work for 300 weeks for the benefit of TUI. So she was correct. They were present employees and they had their comp rights. I want to touch, if I can, on the statute of limitations issues under the Comp Act, and Judge Krause and Judge Fisher and Judge Nasky are right. There's a three-year hard statute, 156 weeks to bring a claim, except for occupational injury, because they're late and late-developing diseases, you have 300 weeks. And to make it clear, TUI could address that, and TUI said, we're not going to shut out the plaintiffs from their common law rights if their claim manifests after the statute of limitation period. I will bar them under the compact. And I believe you can find that it's on page 28 of the Lexis opinion.
But if we're not persuaded that the discovery rule applies here or that you've adequately pleaded the claim, then whether it's a matter of a time bar under work comp and workers' comp exclusivity or a time bar under common law, the claims couldn't proceed, right?
I still believe that's a question of fact and there's been no discovery.
Well, so let's, but do you agree with that premise?
Say that again?
The question of a time bar, if we're not persuaded that the discovery rule applies, then whether it's a time bar under workers' comp or a time bar under common law, either way the claim couldn't proceed. In other words, it's the threshold question, the time bar question.
And I agree with you. It's our opinion, and we believe that they still don't know all the operative facts to conclude as a matter of law they should have known earlier in 2 years of when the complaint was filed. And that goes back to the Gleason case, where they had hard evidence 5 years before they filed the complaint. And there the Supreme Court said it was wrong to grant summary judgment because a reasonable jury could differ as to what they really knew and when they knew it.
Let me ask you a question Judge Van Aske touched on. On the workers' compensation exclusivity question, should we be certifying this question to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court? And if we should, why haven't you asked for it before this?
I don't think you have to, Judge Fisher. I think the Supreme Court was pretty clear what the public policy in Pennsylvania was, and that's why they came out with TUI.
Okay.
But if the court wishes to do so, okay, it can. I don't think you have to, but that's up for the panel to decide what to do.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. We thank counsel for excellent arguments on all the points, and we'll take the matter under advisement.
Thank you.